Plant on the line. This is the commentary.ca. So sometime last fall, I decided to sign up for a subscription to Geist. I didn't sign up for the magazine because I was familiar with it. I'd never picked it up before. Daniel Francis, who was on last fall for one of his books, is a regular contributor, and it's probably on that basis alone that I sign up for your subscription. Around New Year's, my first issue arrived, the 2007 Winter Edition. I did a leaf through, and the one feature that caught my attention was contributed by my guest now. James Long tells the uniquely interesting story about how, while walking his dog in East Vancouver, he finds a suitcase of photo albums and scrapbooks sitting amidst a pile of garbage ready to be picked up. He rescues the case and sifts through someone else's memories, skipped to the present, and on the 29th of January through to the 3rd of February at Performance Works on Granville Island, opening the Push Festival, theater replacement, a company where Mr. Long is co-artistic director, will be performing Clark and I Somewhere in Connecticut. It is a play based on the abandoned suitcase Long found a couple of years ago, the photographs therein, and the process of finding the people so photographed. Rumble Productions co-produces, and tickets can be had through tickets.ca or 604-231-7535. In March, the show goes to Toronto. It is a fascinating story. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, James Long. Good morning, Mr. Long.
Hi there.
Thanks for joining us. I'm not familiar with the Push Festival. What is that?
The Push Festival is probably about 6 years old now. It's the Push Performing Arts Festival. It's an international festival, and the fellow produces it, Norman Armour, brings in work from around the world, really high-end work from around the world. It's important for Vancouver because there's been a real absence of that. We're sitting here on the West Coast. A lot of things don't come over the mountains. So he's been bringing in work from around the world for about 6 years now and really affecting the performance scene here in Vancouver.
And you were, going through the clippings about you and preparing for this, you were in a show called Broiler. Was that part of the Push Festival a couple years ago?
That wasn't a Push show. That one was part of another Rumble Festival that was happening at the time called The Young and the Restless. But that same year, we did another Push show called The Empty Orchestra. We have theater replacement. We've always considered ourselves Push babies. We've been there from almost day one, and we have a show almost every year inside of it.
And Clark and I Somewhere in Connecticut, that's part of the Vancouver Memory Festival?
It is, yeah. That's a little extra connection that we've made through Geist Magazine. We got together in the fall and last spring, and started discussing this idea of memory, and this show came up, Clark and I Somewhere in Connecticut, the fact that we were working on it, and we talked to them, and they talked to us, and we sort of integrated that into the Memory Festival as well, which is a year-long festival. It will go right around till, we started it November 11th, Remembrance Day, and it's supposed to go for another year.
Before we get into how you found the suitcase and things like that, which I found totally fascinating reading the article and guys, mm-hmm. Just talk to me about when we go to Performance Works on the 29th, the show that we'll see, is that scripted?
It is.
And that's the same show that you'll take to Toronto in March, I gather, right?
Well, you know, it'll be the first time up in Vancouver. So by the time we get to Toronto, we'll have talked to our audience members and select friends who came and saw the show, and we're going to find out what they didn't get, where they got bored, what didn't work, and we'll definitely do a tweak. This show will never stop writing itself because it keeps shifting. And every time we go to a new venue or a new city, normally we go back into our shows and work it out again.
And the list of people who've written the show or created the show, it's more than you, correct?
It's more than me. I am. It all comes down to me when it comes to the words, ultimately. But I'll go home and I'll write and write and write, and then we'll come into the studio and we'll work on things. And Camille Gingras has actually played a huge part in this. She's worked as a dramaturg on this show. And she listens, and she reminds me of where she's falling out. She offers some text to kind of sneak in every now and again, and sort of smooths out whatever I've brought in. And she's been integral to this entire process. It's the first time that we've used a dramaturg to this extent, where she's been involved in the process for almost 2 years now. And we just finished our first 2 weeks of rehearsal on it, leading up to the premiere. And she was in there every single day, putting me through my paces and chopping the heck out of my script, which has been very good.
Really? In 05, you were walking your dog. And where was the suitcase that you'd found?
Well, the suitcase was sitting, actually, it was two doors down from my back door in an alley in East Vancouver. It was sitting probably about 4 or 5 feet away from the garbage cans themselves, and they were being rained on. That was the distinct memory, is looking at these things, realizing that there were photo albums inside and that they were being rained on. And I left them. I just didn't feel like picking up garbage at that point, and I had a show to go to. I was going to go see another theater performance. And I went and saw the theater performance, and I basically spent the entire theater performance thinking about that suitcase and the photo albums inside of it, and came back afterwards and grabbed them, brought them in my house and opened it up, and realized that there was this incredible archive of a couple of extended families combined together, and many of the photos had actually been damaged a little bit by the rain, which was a little disheartening at first. But some of the damage was actually quite beautiful, how it swept across some faces and chopped off faces, or it just swept all around faces and just left them. They were really quite astounding.
And at what point did you say that there's a show in this?
Pretty soon after. I was in the process of defining my next 3 years for the Canada Council. The grant season comes up every September, and the Canada Council started this program, 3 years ago, offering three-year extended project grants. And I was swilling a bunch of ideas in my head. One of my co-collaborator, Craig Hall, who runs Rumble, had given me this short story by a Chinese writer about cannibalism, this man, sort of a Notes from Underground Dostoevsky type thing, that's what I likened it to first, but a man worried that he was going to be cannibalized by his fellow villagers. And we were stumbling around that, and we were working on that, and trying to figure out a way to do it, and I wasn't completely sold, and then we found these photo albums. And so I threw them in the pot together, the idea of cannibalism and these found photo albums, and started spinning. Fortunately, I had about a month before I had to actually hand in my grant. And I started finding a lot of connections just inside this idea of finding this collection of memories and considering to use them for my own purposes, and likening cannibalism quite quickly. And we just spun and spun and spun from there.
Did you, at what point did you seek to find the owners of the albums?
That was in September 2005. We worked on the next summer. I kind of put them aside because I had another couple shows on the go. And we did our first studio work in 2006. And we worked on it, we worked on it, we played a bunch of associative games, and then they were put away again for another year. And through that next year, I did a lot of hunting on the internet, which I've been poo-pooed by for my friends because they don't think it was diligent enough. But I looked on every kind of people finder I could. I looked through any kind of internet searches. I looked for death records. I looked for birth records. And I could find absolutely no connection to anyone in these books through those ways. And then in 2007... we decided to do another workshop, and we took all of our work at that point and we showed it to a bunch of people, and they were of the opinion that it was lovely that we had done a bunch of associative memory work with this stuff, but they were ultimately curious about the people in the books. And so we took it upon ourselves to go and travel to the origins where many of these photos were taken, and it took me about 12 hours before I was on the phone with one of the direct descendants of the patriarch of one of the families.
And there were no names in the book, full names?
There were. They were completely filled with full names, full captions. There was a eulogy to a Pomeranian in it. There were letters. The scrapbooks were complete and full of names. But every name I punched into any kind of search engine, I could find absolutely no connection to, except for one. Actually, I found an obituary for one of the brothers inside this book, and he had died in Nova Scotia, and that was the only connection to 106 different people that are pictured in these albums.
You said it took you 12 hours to find the origin of this family. Where did you travel to? This was in the valley somewhere, or in the interior?
This was in the interior of British Columbia. It's about 500 kilometers east of here, kind of a nondescript place, but I knew where it was. It was written in the books over and over again, and they had a summer home in that area. And we traveled to it. We sort of did our GPSing in our heads, looking at the photos that were in the books and kind of sussing out the mountains and the shape of the lake, and we guessed that the summer property was probably right across the lake from where we were standing, and we went there the next day, and sure enough, the exact same cabin was still standing there. We ended up asking someone if they knew the people that lived there, and she said she had just moved there, so she sent us to the newspaper editor. The newspaper editor said she had to make a few phone calls, and then boom, it was just like that.
And were they happy to see you, the family?
You know, that's what we're discussing right now, with the family. In fact, they were they're still confused, I think, by exactly who we are, and I tried to explain myself as best I could to them. But you know, I'm putting words in their mouth, but it seems if I put myself in their position, it seemed like you had some guy coming from Vancouver that had your entire history in his hands. Stepped into your house and he said, I'm going to make a play about you. And that's where the misinformation happened. And it's still happening. But we've clarified most of it now, and we're going to have another meeting this week and just make sure that they understand that that's not exactly the point of our show. It's nowhere near the point of our show. Our show is about the idea of finding something, speculating upon it, searching for its origins, and dealing with the fallout of that search, which has been quite complicated. It's been very complicated because either I didn't explain myself properly or there's been some miscommunication. And we're just finally settling it this week, I hope.
And in terms of who owns the photo albums, I read in Geist that you'd given them back.
We gave a pair of them back. Because the photo albums are, there's five in total. Two of them deal with this one side of the family. And they're photos that were that could have been developed by someone else that belonged to that side of the family, but were given to this woman who put all the books away. She married in the woman who put all the books together, the archivist we call her. She put the books together in probably the 80s, after she had married this man from the other family and they had separated and he had passed away. So there were two albums that were dedicated to this other family, and I gave those two back because they had pictures of their children in them. They had pictures of their grandchildren in them, and after meeting them and putting a face to this almost obsession that we had built on these books, I realized maybe this wasn't the best thing that we had these things without asking their full permission. So I sent them back to them, and we still have three other ones, and we still have yet to find that side of the family. They're a little more disparate. They've spread out a little bit more, it seems.
How did the photo albums end up two doors from your house?
Still a mystery. They don't know. We don't know. We've made up. Well, part of the whole process has been making up stories and actively speculating on the history of these books and the recent history, too, where the archivist herself, she passed away in 99 or 2000. The books appeared in 2005. And the people who live in the two houses that the books were behind, they were kind of right on the fence, in the adjoining fence. They have no connection whatsoever to them.
I mean, this is endlessly fascinating. I mean, the show reflects a lot of the search that you spent.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny because we, in the works, the past workshop of 07, that's when we realized that there was something really factual in here that people were interested in. And not factual, because our interest is not in this family. We don't want to do a biography of this family. It's never been in our interest because it's just too bloody complicated, you know, and they're a fine family, but there's no great turmoil that happens in it. I don't think it would make that much for that much of a fascinating show. We're interested in how we react to them and how we deal with them, and that's where we sit. That's where we sit with it right now.
And the rabbit suit. There's a little card, a little postcard, I guess it comes with guys with an ad for the show, and there's a little girl with posed with someone in a rabbit suit.
That's right, the rabbit suit. The rabbit suit is obviously a mystery person in the show. We've had a replica rabbit suit made that I wear through part of the show. And the reason we made that rabbit suit is because if I was to be anybody inside these books, the only person I could possibly be would be this masked rabbit. and it's one of the strangest rabbit suits I've ever seen. I don't know, as a three-year-old, I would run screaming from that rabbit suit. He's a really creepy-looking bunny. But that rabbit suit, that's one of the photos from the books. That's, that three-year-old girl is from this other side of the family that we can't find. And so that's why we blacked out her eyes, so we could keep her anonymous at this point. But the rabbit suit is endless fun. I thought we'd have a lot of fun with that rabbit suit, and the woman who made it made a perfect version of it.
And what's the reaction been to people that have read the article?
It's been good. You know, it's been. I've talked to a couple of people about it. It's the fascination. You know, it's the fascination about the questions of what would you do, I think, is one of the questions, and that's a question we talk about inside the show. The question of how do you react to photo albums? The questions of the morality inside of this stuff is certainly active. It's always active for us, and it continues to be active. The questions of the legalities of it is endlessly fascinating, because we're sitting in an age now where we liken it to the idea of standing in a grocery store lineup, and I'll stare at pictures of Nicole Richie forever, or Paris Hilton, or any one of them, and I can make up whatever I want, and I can bring that photograph home. I can put it on my wall if I want to. And suddenly I'm in the same position where I have a bunch of photo albums of people I don't know again, and I can speculate endlessly on these things.
It doesn't have to be even photos of celebrities, just photos on Facebook, for example.
Facebook's a great example. I've talked to people about that phenomenon where there's people putting pictures of them on their Facebook pages. I'm not a Facebook guy. I'm leery of Facebook for that very reason. And they talk about those issues that they have with suddenly their image has been spread around, and they no longer have control over it.
And in terms of what people will see on the 29th, how long's the show?
The show depends. I think it's about an hour and 20. That's what we're hoping for. That's what we like, personally. We like an hour and 20. We're still working out some bugs, and we're cutting stuff, and we're adding stuff, and it's not going to be over 90. It'll probably be about in between an hour and 15 and an hour and a half. That's my best guess.
And this, I guess the reason why I find this so fascinating is I live on East 23rd, and I went to school near 14th Avenue, I guess,
yep.
where you'd found these photos.
Mm-hmm.
And just because it's so close to home, I guess,
yeah.
it makes it fascinating on another level than if the photos had been found in, I don't know, Saskatoon or something.
Yeah.
So thanks so much, James, for coming on to talk about this, because, I can't wait to see the show.
Oh,
and I'm sure people would go see this as well.
Yeah.
Ticketstonight.ca is the website to get the tickets. 231-7535, that's the phone number. I've gotten tickets from Tickets Tonight before, and it's easy to do. So, James, congratulations on this, and break a leg.
Great, thanks, Joe.
The website for theater replacement is theaterreplacement.org. Rumble.org is for Rumble Productions. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Plunton.